Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 566, titled Middle East Matrix, Part 2, It Ain't Necessarily So. Subtitled, He Who Tells the Truth Gets Chased Out of Nine Villages, Part 3. Very quickly, the title of the program refers, first of all, to the popular series of motion pictures, The Matrix. The basic thrust of those movies is that humanity is being kept in thrall by a computer-generated series of total environment illusions, to coin a phrase. Those illusions are being generated by a group of malevolent machines who have all of the human race controlled, by basically controlling their cognitive input. Their perceptions are fundamentally altered by a very sophisticated computer-generated matrix. That is not a bad metaphor for what has taken place in the Middle East. Of course, you know, none of us, really, except for a tiny handful of people, were actually there. What people know is what they have gleaned from mediated information. And as I indicated briefly in Side 1, those media are not in any way objective. They have been skewed largely by economics, a subject we're going to go into at greater length here. But as a result, people have a very distorted picture, not only of what happened in the recent Lebanese war, but also the whole history of the Israeli-Palestinian or Israeli-Arab conflict. One of the major reasons for that is economics. The Arabs have oil and the Jews don't, and it really is just about that simple. Traditional anti-Semitism comes in there, and in the case of the BBC, sort of traditional British bigotry and chauvinism, and although many elements of the British people are among the finest and most forward-looking human beings in the world, other elements are about as reactionary as anybody you'd want to find. The wogs begin at Calais, what? And that's coming into play here. But economics has a lot to do with it. I talked about who owns the media, at least in this country, in Side 1 ever so briefly. We're going to go into that at greater length in Side 2. And part of what has taken place is simply the dictates of the marketplace. It is an economic phenomenon, and the media marketplace is no different. One of the more thoughtful websites that's gone into this, and by the way, the coverage of media distortion in the recent Lebanese war, as well as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, has been handled much better by some elements of the conservative community than by the so-called progressive community. Even a pile of fertilizer like Rush Limbaugh, of all people who's gone into this, and when Rush Limbaugh does a better job than some elements of the progressive community, you know that the elevator has hit the basement, folks, because Rush Limbaugh is about the bottom. As John Loftus put it a couple of weeks ago, he's a waste of oxygen. By the way, I should also, before we launch right into this next article, I should also mention a couple of points. First of all, there's an old Turkish proverb, he who tells the truth gets chased out of nine villages, and the whole Israeli situation the Israeli-Arab conflict is so polarized that that's the way I feel about it. People are rabid one way or the other. Also, I'm frequently accused of being a, quote, Zionist, unquote. That's really, these days, particularly coming out of the so-called progressive sector, it's a polite term, but he's a Jew. And not a Zionist, and I'm not a Jew either, as a matter of fact. And nonetheless, though, that's the thrust of that, and that's where the bigotry comes in. It's something, however, that gets frequently repeated, and people should be aware that X number of years ago, Archives on Audio, my old tape duplication service, was one of the focal points of the ADL spying scandal in the Bay Area in the late 80s and early 90s, probably because of the fact that I have talked about the fascist element in the Zionist movement. For people that throw that canard around, you know, he's a Zionist. What you do is you go to the Spitfire website, use the search function, do a search on the word Zionist plus fascist. He uses the Google index and see what you find. I had some linthead from the East Coast who wanted to talk to somebody about fascist element in the Zionist movement, but he said, you don't have anything in your your archives talking about it. So I said, well, actually, I've got about four pages of indexed Google material about it. But anyway, that's the way people behave, frankly. This whole subject is so emotionally charged that it's a difficult subject to deal with. And I compare it with the O.J. case, where people were wired, I mean, just absolutely rabid, and yet they had been fundamentally misinformed. Perhaps in weeks to come, I'll give an overview of the OJ case and all the stuff that people didn't get told, which is fundamental, and an overview of the Israeli-Palestinian thing. And although the Israeli-Palestinian issue goes back really to the Ottoman Empire, and that in and of itself renders it inaccessible to the average American. You talk about the Ottoman Empire to the average American, they think you're talking about a retail furniture outlet. So that's one thing that is different between the OJ case and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. However, the degree of media distortion, in some cases unintentional, is commensurate, and the venality, the viciousness, the irrationality that manifests itself in connection with this is identical. One of the websites that's done a good job of talking about the bias, the media bias in the Lebanese war, is a website called Little Green Footballs. I can't speak for the website as a whole. I've only accessed a few articles from it over the years. Every one of those has been quite thoughtful, however. And one of the things that they talk about is an economic consideration that has had a lot to do with the distorted coverage of the Lebanese war, and that is something called APTN. That is the Associated Press TV News, and as we're going to see, there's a very, very significant economic/marketplace dynamic that governs APTN, which in turn has a lot to do with the global coverage of the Lebanese war. This is an article from Friday, August 11th, from the Little Green Footballs website. It's called LGF, Little Green Footballs Exclusive, How Much Does It Cost to Buy Global TV News? An LGF reader who worked for Associated Press TV News sent me the following article explaining how APTN, Associated Press TV News, works and suggesting a reason why their coverage of the Middle East is so overwhelmingly biased against Israel. The vast majority of the TV news pictures you see are produced by two TV news companies. Presented here is a case for how a large amount of money has been used to inject a clear bias into the heart of the global TV news gathering system. That this happens is not at question, but whether it is by accident or design is harder to tell. You may not realize it, but if you watch any TV news broadcast on any station anywhere in the world, there is a better than even chance you will view pictures from APTN. BBC, Fox, Sky, CNN, and every major broadcaster subscribes to and uses APTN pictures. While the method by which they operate is interesting, it is the extra service this U.S.-owned and U.K.-based company offers to Arab states that is really interesting. The Associated Press is a not-for-profit news gathering and dissemination service based in the United States. Formed in 1848, the AP grew up from an agreement from the six major New York newspapers of the day. They wanted to defray the large telegraphy costs that they were all independently incurring for sending the same news coast to coast. Despite being highly competitive, they formed the Associated Press as a collection agency and agreed to share the material. Today, that six-newspaper cooperative is an organization serving more than 1,500 newspapers and 5,000 broadcast outlets in the United States. Abroad, AP services are printed and broadcast in 112 countries. Associated Press Television News is a wholly owned subsidiary of AP. It was formally set up as a separate entity in 1994. It's run as a commercial entity, remember AP itself is nonprofit, and aims to make a profit. Any profit it does make is fed back to AP, which is nonprofit making. APTN profits reduce the news gathering costs incurred by the 1,500 U.S. newspapers that collectively own the AP. APTN is the largest television news gathering player, larger than Reuters, its only true competitor in this field. While AP is based in the U.S., APTN operates out of large premises in Camden, London. They have news teams, offices, and broadcast facilities in just about every important place in the world. APTN uses news crews and broadcast facilities all over the world to record video of newsworthy events in news, sport, and entertainment. These pictures are either sent unedited or very partially edited back to London. Most news is fed back within hours, but they also cover and feed certain events live, news conferences in Iraq, press conferences after a sporting event, etc. Most of these stories are sent in with natural sound, unquote. There is no journalist providing a voiceover, but the choice of what to shoot is in the hands of the local producer and camera crew. Local crews are sometimes employed directly by APTN, or more often, stringers are hired for a particular event or paid for the footage they have already captured. Once the stories have been fed back to the UK, they are edited. This is a round-the-clock operation. The goal is to produce a 30-minute news bulletin comprising 6 or 7 stories every few hours. These stories are made by editing down the raw rushes that come in from all over the world. This is done by a team of producers who work for the news editor. They don't supply a voiceover, but they do edit, discard, and sequence pictures dictating the emphasis and direction of the story. They will accompany each story with a written description of each shot and the general reason this was a story. This is repeated for news, sport, and entertainment with a geographical emphasis that shifts around the world as different markets wake and sleep. The output of this is called the Global News Wire, or GNW. This is how APTN makes its money. News organizations, mostly TV but not all, subscribe to APTN and pay an annual amount to both watch and then reuse the stories that are fed over the GNW, the Global News Wire. The stories are supplied with sound, but no journalists do a voiceover. Most commercial news stations like the BBC, Sky, Fox, or CNN would take this feed, decide which pictures to use, then re-edit it, and supply an appropriate voiceover for the story. The video comes with a written description of the shots and the events that occur in them. The fee for this feed depends on the size of the receiving organization, their audience size, and a negotiation with APTN's sales force. It is pretty much impossible, however, to operate a TV news organization without taking feeds from either APTN or Reuters, or usually both. The agreement with APTN usually allows the receiving news channel unlimited use of the video for 2 weeks. If they want to reshow those pictures after that, then they have to separately license the pictures, which can cost anything from $100 to $10,000 per 30 seconds, depending on the content. Now, here's where some of the marketplace economic dynamics have a lot to do with what goes on the Global News Wire, and in turn, one of the reasons why the news coverage of the Middle East is so distorted. And again, it's partially a factor of petroleum, and not just oil per se, but also the reinvested petroleum profits, a huge, huge compilation of wealth that everybody wants to get in on. However, there is another significant part of their business model that affects the rest of the business. While most of the world takes news pictures with minimal interpretation beyond editing, the Arab Gulf states have asked for and receive a different and far more expensive service. These states pay for a complete news report service, including full editing and voiceovers from known journalists. The news organizations in the Arab countries don't do anything beyond verify that they are appropriate for local tastes before broadcast. What this means is that while there are around 50 people producing news pictures for the whole world working in Camden at any time, there are a further 50 Arabic-speaking staff producing finished stories exclusively for the Arab states of the Gulf. This has a tremendous effect on the whole feel of the building as these two teams feed pictures and people back and forth and sit in adjacent work areas. The slant of the stories required by the Gulf states has a definite effect on which footage is used and discarded. This affects both the Gulf newsroom and the main global newsroom. This full-service feed is much more expensive for the customers than the usual service, but it is also a much higher profit margin for APTN. Bear in mind it is APTN, a profit-making service that generates the income to support AP proper, which is non-profit. And it is this Gulf service that provides a lot of the money for APTN. Here's where the economics come in, beginning again with this passage. This full-service feed is much more expensive for the customers than the usual service, but it also has a much higher profit margin for APTN. This is partly because there is great commonality in what they can send to most of the Gulf states taking this service. Stories are made once and used in a number of countries. Anything involving Israel is a favorite with Gulf Arab states for showing to their viewers. Could this be the reason why Israel receives a disproportionate amount of particularly negative coverage, especially and increasingly ever since the early 1970s? Honest reporting is usually unable to decide which is most biased, AP or BBC. As the BBC is often using APTN footage, the difference is minor. A significant twist to what is seen concerns what is not seen. Footage such as the Palestinian mob joyfully lynching two Israeli reservists in Ramallah in October of 2000 is held by APTN's library. Any attempt to license this film for reshow is carefully vetted. Requests for the use of sensitive clips, unquote, are referred directly to the library director. This is not the case with clips that paint Israel in a bad light. Likewise, the reshowing of Palestinian celebrations on 9/11 is considered, quote, sensitive, unquote. The way in which raw footage such as APTN's is compiled into a news report and sent round the world has also been analyzed. The second draft gives a comprehensive view of how editing can make all the difference. APTN is the gatekeeper that sits between you and the actual event. You will never see what the editors at APTN see before they compile your evening news. What do you think is cut out? Was this organization set up with this built-in bias on purpose? Is there some way that the expensive payments made by Gulf state governments form part of a deliberate attempt to skew the media? In Islam and Dimitude, 2002, by Bat Yeor on pages 294 to 296, she recounts how decisions were taken in the wake of the Arab-Israeli War of 1967 to try to put across an anti-Jewish, anti-Zionist message. Successive conferences resolved to contribute vast sums, quote, to universities, centers for Islamic studies, international communications agencies, and private and governmental news organizations in order to win over world opinion, unquote. The messages from these conferences stressed an addition to the more familiar violent jihad. They also emphasized the importance of jihad by the written and spoken word, what we would recognize as classic propaganda. Without question, APTN's interesting business model represents a concrete example of an ongoing financial contribution, unquote, to an important communications agency promoting a pro-Arab bias. By the way, remember, of course, there are about 5 million Jews in Israel, plus about another 1.4 million Israeli Arabs, something you never hear about, and there are 300 million Arabs in the Gulf states. So, well, obviously, there's more of a market there. One of the things to keep in mind, too, is that there has been some very deliberate distortion. As pointed out in the Tom Gross article in the National Post, Hezbollah maintain a very, very effective control over the war coming out of Lebanon. There also was quite a bit of deliberate distortion of what actually took place. And this is also not to say that I think what took place there was a cakewalk. People are familiar with William Tecumseh Sherman's famous statement that war is hell, not popularity seeking. I think people have become so familiar with that statement that they've lost sight of what it actually means. And it is literally true. War is the worst thing in the world. It's about killing people and destroying property. One of the things that factored into the entire Lebanon war was a very bad revision of the military plan. I've seen different accounts of that in the Israeli media. The fact is that there was originally to be a very different military campaign undertaken, but it was scrapped at the last minute in favor of an air-only campaign, and you cannot conduct war from the air alone. It's a big mistake. That's been proven many times, and it was proven yet again here. What is unclear is whether it was Olmert who canceled the overall ground campaign, which would have worked and would have minimized civilian casualties, in my opinion, and military affairs are something I know something about, or whether, as some articles in the Israeli press have maintained, it was pressure from the Bush administration that led to an air-only campaign. If so, then you can chalk up another one to W and Rummy, who, for as warlike as they are, they don't know jack squat about actually waging war successfully. And that's one of the many reasons why we are in the sorry position that we are in. There's also been a lot of serious, very, very distorted coverage, deliberate falsification of Israeli atrocities. Perhaps the most ludicrous was the notion that Israel was deliberately attacking ambulances. And they show these ambulances with a little bit of damage, supposedly after they'd been rocketed and strafed by Israeli aircraft. And quite frankly, those charges are ludicrous on their surface. Those ambulances quite obviously have not been hit with aerial munitions. One of them is really quite amusing if seen from a distance. There's a hole right in the middle of the Red Cross on the top of the ambulance, about maybe what would be an entrance point for maybe a 200 or 250 millimeter round, which would have disintegrated the vehicle and left a huge crater in the ground underneath. What it is, basically, was there's a vent, there's a fixture in the ceiling of these ambulances that would have gone there. There is a website that has a pretty good analysis of the ambulance canard. That will be posted on the description for this show. There also was a good analysis of what John Loftus referred to as the Kana non-massacre. The distortions of the news coverage and the willful exaggeration and or falsification of, quote, Israeli war crimes, unquote, had a lot to do with the course of the war itself. Israel, there would have been a lot of casualties on the Israeli side. They were getting ready to finally do what they should have done from the beginning, which is to launch a serious ground campaign. You can't do what they were trying to do from the air. And yet, that was interdicted by not only the Kana non-massacre, but the stories of the Israeli ambulance attacks and so forth. And it has now emerged, certainly, that the ambulance attacks were ludicrous on their surface. These were not vehicles that had been struck with aerial munitions. The Kana attacks were less obviously a falsification. Exactly what did take place is somewhat in doubt. There was a period of some hours between the Israeli airstrikes and the collapse of the building, and whoever did or did not die in that building, there certainly was embellishment of the story where children's corpses were produced that had advanced rigor mortis. And even beyond that, they did not have any blood on them or feces or urine or the bloating that would be expected from corpses of people who died violently and then laid for X amount of time in the Middle Eastern summer heat. This, however, was never seriously questioned. Those atrocity stories had a lot to do with interdicting the military action when they did. Bush and Condi were giving Israel pretty much a blank check diplomatically. All of a sudden, after the Kana non-massacre, whatever did happen, all of a sudden Condi Rice sort of acceded to pressure to bring things to a quick halt. As it stands now, who knows what's going to happen? It does not look as if John Loftus's belief that ultimately Israel would be given a green light by the Arabs, public appearances to the contrary notwithstanding, to finish off Hezbollah. Rather, it looks as though there's going to be another sort of charlatan treaty with regard to what's taking place there. Already, the basic principles of the UN resolutions have been violated. Hezbollah has indicated in no uncertain terms that they're not going to disarm. The Lebanese army has overtly stated that they're not going to try to disarm them. So that basically, that's what it's all about right there. And so we will see what we will see. The French initially were going to send a whole bunch of troops. Then they decided they weren't going to send 200. Now they're going to send 2,000. Educated guess would be that this is essentially not going to accomplish anything long term, with the possible exception of allowing Hezbollah to rearm so the whole thing can start all over again. One of the interesting things, too, about the distortion of the coverage of events in the Middle East, and that concerns the issue of Hezbollah itself. I wonder what percentage of people in the world as a whole, particularly in the United States, realize that Hezbollah is a minority faction of the Lebanese government, which it is. It has been called, Hezbollah that is, has been called a state within a state. One Lebanese writer made a much more intelligent statement. She called it a state within a non-state, because really Lebanon is to a large extent dysfunctional. It is ostensibly a country. Hezbollah is part of its government, and yet Hezbollah was able to wage war against a neighbor, and then when the neighbor responded, although in an unintelligent fashion for reasons I've already explained, there was originally a much different campaign that had been planned, then everybody screams bloody murder. Well, again, it's a very strange situation. And with regard to Hezbollah, in the descriptions for not only For the Record 564, but 565 and 566 and the rest of the programs in this series, you're going to be able to see websites with pictures of Hezbollah rallies. Hezbollah, like Hamas, like Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the last two being offshoots of the Islamo-Fascist Muslim Brotherhood, they use the Nazi salute. It's very seldom that I've been in a position in this broadcast to simply point to a picture and say, there, that's what it's all about. Because when you sit, and when one talks about the Muslim Brotherhood, if you talk about the Hanjar Division or François Genoux or Hassan al-Banna or the Bank al-Taqwa or Youssef Nada, past the point people's eyes cross. But basically, I will point people on the descriptions to these programs to some pictures. And basically what Hezbollah does is what Hamas does, what Palestinian Islamic Jihad does. They give the Nazi salute in obeisance to their origins. There is no gesture like that in the Arab or Islamic world. Basically the message is Sieg Heil, let's kill the Jews and also anybody else, Americans, whoever else gets in our way. Again, I cannot stress strongly enough to people that they should use the websites that are not only the Spitfire website, but other linked websites with this sequence of programs. Middle East Matrix, the interview with John Loftus, He Who Tells the Truth Gets Chased Out of Nine Villages. Looking at some of the photographic information, not only the pictures, the many pictures of Hezbollah rallies where they're giving the Nazi salute, but also the analyses of the Qana situation, the ambulance non-attacks, and also something I'm going to be going into in weeks to come, some very firm indications that a lot of the violence between the Israelis and the Palestinians has been at times deliberately exaggerated and at critical times fabricated altogether. The evidence there is very, very strong. But again, it's a matter of partially anti-Semitism. Yeah, that's part of it, but an awful lot of it is economics as well. In weeks to come, too, we're going to be going into the whole issue of was the invasion of Iraq a Jewish conspiracy? In the so-called, note my choice of words, in the so-called progressive sector, that is almost an accepted matter of faith at this point. And it was a very telling article by Greg Palast, one of the relatively few solid journalists left in this country. He wrote an article for Tikkun magazine analyzing, was the invasion of Iraq a Jewish conspiracy? Because, boy, anti-Semitism is back big time. And as distasteful as it is, it's just something I'm going to have to tackle here because the end is nigh. That's one thing I'm in agreement with the fundamentalist Christians. I think the end is very nigh. Unfortunately, I'm trying to prevent it, and they are certainly passively acquiescing. www.spitfirelist.com. That's the Spitfire website. Do use the descriptions, because every For the Record show is turned into an article-length description. The descriptions for the sequence of programs about the Middle East Matrix are especially important, because there is critical photographic evidence. Also, other linked websites, www.wfmu.org. The heroic station, sister station, WFMU, is archiving the entire For the Record series on Real Audio. They're podcasting For the Record. There is a mini anti-fascist library of old anti-fascist books available for download for free. There's a search function website with the declassified government documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry. All kinds of material to supplement the broadcasts themselves. And do avail yourselves of the lectures available on the Spitfire website. Use the search function, and some of you might even want to click on the page to support the work that I'm doing. This concludes For the Record program number 566, Middle East Matrix Part 2, It Ain't Necessarily So, subtitled He Who Tells the Truth Gets Chased Out of Nine Villages. This has been recorded on August 27th of 2006. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.